And a very good morning to you. Good morning. Hope you're well. It's Sunday, July 9th, 2017. Thank you for joining me for Sunday View. You are listening to Richie Allen on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, TuneIn Radio, or richieallen.co.uk. Beautiful morning it is here in this great city. Got a really packed programme for you, so without further ado, let's get on with it. You can tweet me at any time during the course of the next hour or thereabouts. The Twitter handle is at Richie Allen Show.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
Great stuff. Welcome to Sunday View. You can also email. The email is richie@richieallen.co.uk. So do drop me an email or tweet me. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Europe's most listened to independent radio show. Let's crack on with this one.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com.
And Sunday View, of course, is where we take a look at the front pages of the UK tabloids and broadsheets for Sunday, July 9th. Lot about Brexit, lot about the G20 as well. And it's interesting stuff, it really is, at least the angle we're going to take on it anyway. So we'll do that then, around about 45, 50, 55 minutes as usual. Timing this is not my forte. Never been any good at doing that if I had to be tied down. Got to do a 48-minute show, Richie, to allow for 4 3-minute ad breaks. I wouldn't be able to do it. At least I don't think so. Anyway, lovely day it is. Lovely, lovely day yesterday as well. Surprisingly, wasn't forecast to be gorgeous yesterday, but it was. Went to Tatton Park. Wonderful, wonderful park. South, just south of Manchester. Beautiful place. Been there quite a few times. Loved it. And spoke to a lovely old gentleman catching carp. What a relaxing thing to do that must be. Sitting down in the good weather with a nice big wide-brimmed hat. Catching a bit of carp. And of course putting it back in after you've caught it. Wonderful. I was thinking and reflecting on the way back. People are certainly more human when removed from the madness of cities, aren't they? I think they are. I must ask my friend and colleague, Jean-Anne Crowley, who's decamped from Dublin to Galway, where things are a bit more serene. Well, not quite Galway, but near Cleggan, which is a beautiful rural part of the world. I think people are more human when you take them out of the rush and the madness of the cities. They tend to talk to one another. And they tend to be pleasantly surprised when you stop to talk to them. I think, anyway. Nothing groundbreaking about that thought, right? But there you are. I want to say good morning to Angela Miller Davis. Angela, good morning. And thanks for your message on Facebook. I can't reply to it because I'm banned again. Angela's mother, whose name is Angie, is a new listener to the programme. So, Angie, if you're listening to the programme today, good morning and thanks very much for giving us some of your valuable time. I really do appreciate that. And Angela, thank you for letting me know that. Let's look at the papers. 4 minutes past, or 3.5 minutes past the hour. It is Sunday, July 9th. And this is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. Do bookmark davidicke.com/headlines. Going to start with the Sunday Observer. Now, the headline on the Observer is German industry in stark warning to UK over Brexit. Here's the gist of it. Here's the gist of it. I'll read you a couple of paragraphs. German industry has warned Britain not to rely on its help in securing a good Brexit deal in a stark intervention that strikes a blow at the government's EU departure plans. Senior ministers have repeatedly claimed since the election that Germany's powerful exporters will exert pressure for a deal handing Britain substantial access to the EU's markets. Now, yes, UK ministers have said that, but commentators like this commentator, we've also said that. German car manufacturers and sausage manufacturers and wine producers would put pressure on their own government not to screw with the EU. I'll tell you why in a minute. The article continues. However, ministers are being told it is up to the British government to limit the economic fallout from its decision to leave the single market. With the government facing new pressure from business to soften its Brexit plans, German industrialists also warn Britain will struggle to avoid economic damage as a result of exiting the bloc. Two of Germany's biggest industry groups have told The Observer that their main concern during the Brexit process is protecting the single market for the remaining 27 members, even if this harms trade with Britain. Now, of course, I, dear listener, don't believe any of that. And I'll tell you why in a minute. I believe that's absolute nonsense. But a couple of people are quoted. Dieter Kempf is quoted. He's the president of the BDI, that's the Federation of German Industries. He said that basically defending the single market, the key European project, is the priority. Europe must maintain the integrity of the single market and its four freedoms: goods, capital, services and labour. He went on to say it's the responsibility of the UK government to limit the damage on both sides of the channel. And Ingo Kramer, president of the Confederation of German Employers Associations, also told The Observer, the single market is one of the major assets of the EU. Access to it requires the acceptance of all four single market freedoms, which we've been saying to you time and time again, haven't we, on this programme. You can't have access to the single market and limit freedom of movement. You can't have that. It's as simple as that. You're either in the EU or you're out of the EU. The UK, continues Ingo Kramer, German industrialist, will remain a very important partner for us, but we need a deal that's fair to both sides, but remembering the cohesion of the remaining EU member states has the highest priority. So stark warnings, says The Observer. I would say monumental bollocks. Why would I say that? Because it's obvious that these two guys have been hand-picked by certain political interests in Germany to make these claims. You know, Germany's top export destinations are the United States, France and the United Kingdom. Germany exports nearly $100 billion worth of goods and merchandise into the UK. Yes, let me repeat that. Germany exports nearly $100 billion worth of trade sold into the UK every year. As for the European Union itself, well, it really needs the UK because the UK, wait for it, is the EU's biggest single market for selling goods. Combined, the EU sells more goods to the UK than it does to America. Right? Right. And the rest of the world, if you look at the rest of the world away from the EU, and if you look at the rest of the world as a single economy, that economy is growing far, far quicker than the EU. So in other words, markets are opening up. You'd love to be the business secretary, wouldn't you? If everything was fair and equal and it wasn't poisoned and corrupt and filthy as it is. All things being fair and equal, you'd love to be the business secretary doing trade deals all over the world with developing economies, wouldn't you? But of course, the media won't report it like that. Do you know how many German cars come here a year? 900,000. German engineers sell 7 billion quid worth of goods here annually. So these industry leaders, I would argue, can't prove it, but I would argue, I would suggest, these industry leaders are obviously coming under pressure from politicians within Germany and from politicians operating out of Brussels. Massive pressure coming from the tyrants lurking in the shadows of the European Union. Most of these people not known, never will be known, never photographed. Because the one world government agenda depends on the success of the European Union. And it cannot allow a country or a bloc like the United Kingdom come out of the European Union and obviously do very well. We can't have that. Staying on this theme, because it's very important on this theme, Jacob Rees-Mogg, conservative, Brexiteer as well, big, big opponent of the European Union. He was on the BBC Question Time programme, which airs every weeknight at 10:45. It doesn't air every weeknight. It airs every Thursday. It airs every Thursday at 10:45 p.m. on BBC One. It's like a flagship weekly panel show. So Jacob Rees-Mogg was among the panellists on the programme this Thursday just gone. And he was in good form on the European Union and on why we left and on all this nonsense about a hard and a soft Brexit there. Jacob Rees-Mogg, have a listen to some of this. It's good, and I think it's mildly educational.
Given that 48% voted Remain, why is a hard Brexit being seen as the will of the people?
You are either in the European Union or you leave it. And this is... This is not only my view, this is the view of Donald Tusk, one of the presidents of the European Union, who said there is no such thing as hard and soft Brexit, there is being in the European Union or out. And if we're out of the European Union, we cannot have our laws determined by the European Court of Justice. We cannot have all our regulations set by being in the internal market. And we can't lose all our trading opportunities by being in the customs union. And this was clear at the election. I brought a quotation, in case this came up, from Wolfgang Schäuble, a very senior German politician. And he let the cat out of the bag after the referendum, because he said he'd been asked to say this by one George Osborne, the then Chancellor. And he said, if the majority in Britain opt for Brexit, that would be a decision against the single market. In is in, out is out. We knew what we were voting for. We voted... And democracy must deliver.
They knew damn well what they were voting for. I should say we, because I voted for the first time in 15 years last June. And of course, I haven't voted since, but I voted in that. And he's right. People knew that leaving meant leaving the single market. I'm not going to play the audio again because I've played it too many times. Of Cameron, of Osborne and all the other Remainers, making it bloody well clear that if you left, you were leaving in toto, right? Now, Mogg then got into an interesting exchange with Craig Oliver. Now, Craig Oliver is a despicable little shit. A despicable little shit, dear boy. He is a journalist, BBC, he's worked for all the newspapers, former director of communications for David Cameron even. He's a Europhile. And a despicable little shit. Here he is in an exchange with Jacob Rees-Mogg on the same Question Time programme.
A hard Brexit is a term used by people who don't want us to leave the European Union and regret the result. And they pretend that there is a soft Brexit.
Jacob, you've said something tonight that's simply not true. You're saying it's absolutely binary and that you can't leave the EU and actually have some of the benefits of it. Well, you can. You could decide to have the ECJ, the European Court of Justice, have some jurisdiction. You could choose to have the customs union. Now, I've been told that in government, they understand that you would have to increase trade with far-flung markets by 4,000% to balance the problems of leaving the customs union in the single market. You are taking people for fools if you are claiming that it is just simply a binary decision and it's not going to have any impact on our economy, because it is already.
This is terminological inexactitude. The truth is that if we still have our laws determined by the European Court of Justice, then our Parliament is no longer able to make all our laws, and the votes of the British people do not count because our laws are made and interpreted
that
by a foreign
nonsense.
Court.
We're under the ECJ now and we make
we
laws.
We are under the ECJ now and we voted to leave.
Nonsense.
We cannot allow our law to be overturned by Brussels if we have left the European Union. It is not only a binary decision, it is a most obviously binary one. Who your judges are, who interprets your law, is fundamental
Jacob,
to whether you are an independent
Jacob,
nation
we
or not.
We set security in this country, defence, education, health. Once you get
well, I'm
past
glad
that, there is very
word,
little
Jacob.
That the European...
I'm so glad that we set tax in this country. We can't set the tax rate on women's sanitary items because that's determined by the European Union.
Yes, very good. I loved how he began that. Well, this is terminological inexactitude. I guess that the David Cameron former employer... and former employee of the BBC hadn't a clue what terminological inexactitude.
A hard Brexit is a term used by people who don't want us to leave the European Union and regret the result. And they pretend that there is a soft Brexit.
Jacob, you've said something tonight that's simply not true. You're saying it's absolutely binary and that you can't leave the EU and actually have some of the benefits of it. Well, you can. You could decide to have the ECJ, the European Court of Justice, have some jurisdiction. You could choose to have the customs union. Now, I've been told that in government, they understand that you would have to increase trade with far-flung markets by 4,000% to balance the problems of leaving the customs union in the single market. You are taking people for fools if you are claiming that it is just simply a binary decision and it's not going to have any impact on our economy, because it is already.
This is terminological inexactitude. The truth...
I just love that. I had to hear that again. Terminological inexactitude, which is another way of saying a lie. It's a humorous way of saying you're lying through your arse there, son. And of course, he is lying through his arse. You cannot leave and have some of the benefits. Then you have a Norway situation. You're still in the European Union. You are allowing freedom of movement and you are paying billions every year into the cabal. Craig Oliver's an idiot. Mog had him for breakfast. What about another referendum? A referendum on the deal itself. This is what was said.
A second say, a referendum. And I'll come to you,
sir. It's a first say on the deal.
This is characteristic of the EU. Vote in the way that Brussels doesn't like, and you have to vote again until you've done what they tell you. It seems to me we had a referendum, we decided to leave, and that must be implemented or we deny democracy.
Simple as that. We're out. Now get on with getting out. No talk of remaining part of this or remaining part of that. No more lies about economic downturns and about catastrophic events, catastrophic future poverty situations if we don't stay in and if we don't become, you know, at least half a member of the European Union. It's utter garbage. But they won't allow it, you see. Here's imminent new Lib Dem leader Vince Cable. Hilarious, the Liberal Democrat Party. Hilarious. This guy, virtually unchallenged. He's going to become the next leader of the Lib Dem, the Liberal Democrats. He's, of course, a former business secretary. He was the business secretary in the coalition between 2010 and 2015. He was on the Andrew Marr programme this morning and he told Andrew Marr that he doesn't think Brexit will happen. This is Vince Cable on Andrew Marr.
But you've talked about making alliances and talking across parties. Do you begin to see an alliance sufficiently deep into the Labour family and deep into the Tory family as well of pro-EU politicians, which is big enough to frustrate Theresa May's ideas on Brexit?
Yes. I think a lot of people are keeping their heads down. We'll see what happens in the autumn when people come back. I'm beginning to think that, you know, Brexit may never happen. I think the problems
really?
Are so enormous. The problems are so enormous. The divisions within the two major parties are so enormous. I can see a scenario in which this doesn't happen. Certainly, you know, it's some our policy of having a second referendum, which didn't really cut through in the general election, is designed to give a way out when it becomes clear that the Brexit is potentially disastrous.
Potentially disastrous. Of course, it isn't disastrous. Cable was one of those people saying last year that the disastrous effects of it would be felt immediately upon leaving. It would be imminent disaster, said Cable. 13 months later, no disaster. He's a Muppet. But you know what? Not only is Cable and his ilk telling us that this might not happen, but senior Conservative politicians who are all in favour of leaving the European Union, like former Brexit Minister David Jones, are warning that the movement to block this is gathering pace. Now, David Jones is the former Brexit Minister. He is for a complete severance with the European Union, back to the pre-1970s, the UK in total control of its borders and free to do deals with whoever it wants to do. But he's written in today's Mail on Sunday, and we should pay very close attention to what it is that he wrote in the paper today. The headline is, not on the front page, but inside, it's an editorial, Reversers, reversers, as he calls them, must not be allowed to destroy my party with their treason. Comment by David Jones, former Brexit minister, in the Mail on Sunday. And he writes, and I'm going to read this verbatim, I'm not going to editorialise it. He writes, Parliament exists to reflect and enact the will of the people, not to subvert it. But amid the heat of high summer, it looks very much as if a plot is underway at Westminster. A plot to stymie the clear, unequivocal wish of the British people to leave the EU, as expressed in last year's referendum. And it is, I very much regret to say, a plot that may yet succeed if MPs who truly respect that referendum result allow this conspiracy to proceed. It is also a plot that would cause immeasurable damage to the Conservative Party for a generation, if not forever. Now, this may come as a shock to some of my fellow Brexiteers. They may naively think that, as Theresa May has already invoked Article 50, the legal trigger beginning the Brexit process, the leaving process, is irreversible. We either reach an acceptable deal by March 30th, 2019, as I hope and expect, or we don't. Either way, we're out, based on legally prescribed EU procedure on a fixed date in just under 2 years' time. Game, set and match, as Wimbledon umpires say. But, fanatically pro-European Union MPs, both Labour and misguided Tory ones, have hatched a cunning plot. A plot, even. Yes, we will leave the EU at that appointed time, but on such ludicrously pro-Brussels terms that we might as well have stayed exactly where we were. Still in the single market with all the free movement of people that entails? Tick. Still locked inside the customs union and unable to take advantage of a host of new free trade deals with the rest of the world? Tick. Still subject partly or wholly to the jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice? Tick. And perhaps most damagingly of all, still having to send billions of British taxpayers' pounds to Brussels each year? Tick again. In other words, we will have left, but not left. Just like the Hotel California, as rock group Eagles put it, we can check out any time we like, but we can never leave. This deceit on the British people won't be done in an instant. It will be done over the next 18 months, slowly and gradually. We will be told that this vital interest means we must stay in the single market, or that this essential cause means the customs union must still apply. Eventually, the Remainers in the Commons and the House of Lords, or referendum reversers as they are now known, will have successfully pulled the wool over voters and defied the expressed wish of the nation. Such a subversion of last year's referendum result would shatter the credibility of my party for decades to come. And that's an extraordinary article, an opinion piece in the Mail on Sunday by Conservative Party MP David Jones, former Brexit minister. Yes, 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 yes. And I've been saying this for a year. David Icke and his writings and the publications on davidicke.com headlines have been saying this for a year. They will reverse it by putting together a deal that's not worth having. A Brexit that isn't worth having at all. That's what they're doing, you see. It is tyrannical. It is utterly tyrannical. You have the CBI last week, the self-appointed spokesbody for British business, saying that we are absolutely fucked, we are fecked, we are knackered if we leave the European Union. It is an Armageddon. Only months down the road, we're finished. British companies are going to go bust. Mass unemployment. Biblical prophecies of doom coming from all of these people. And it is uncontested. Uncontested. Michel Barnier, the EU's chief negotiator, he's saying that you cannot have equal access to the single market and have benefits from the customs union if you leave. He's saying this clearly. And he's saying this to go alongside what the Remainers are saying about imminent economic Armageddon. This is what Barnier said this week, quite clearly.
I've heard some people in the UK argue that one can leave the single market and keep all of its benefits. That is not possible. I've heard some people in the UK argue that one can leave the single market and build a custom unions to achieve frictionless trade. That is not possible.
Simple as that, says Barnier. So this idea, this Remainer bollocks, that you can have some sort of lukewarm Brexit, and maybe they will achieve such a nonsense, a Brexit that won't be worth having. But remember, senior EU people now, Tusk and Barnier, are saying, no, you can't. You just can't, right? They're scaring people into believing it's a disaster. People need to remember, they told us we'd be crippled economically from day one. They did. They said before the vote, if you come out, it's instant economic destruction. That hasn't materialised. But if you tell a lie enough times, it'll gather enough momentum that people will begin to believe it. Front page of the Sunday Times. Trump throws May a lifeline with trade deal. The Sunday Times says that Theresa May has claimed that plans for a trade deal with the US had put Brexit back on track, as critics warned she faced a legislative war to pass the repeal bill, which of course severs ties with Brussels. Remainers, MPs and peers said they would try to derail the repeal bill, which will be published this coming Thursday, which coincidentally is the first anniversary of May becoming Prime Minister. Trump throws May a lifeline with a trade deal. Here is Trump talking while sitting alongside May in Hamburg at the G20 meeting. Here's Trump.
I'd like to thank Prime Minister May for being with us. We've had tremendous talks. There is no country that could possibly be closer than our country for a long time. And I just want to say thank you very much. We are working on a trade deal, which will be a very, very big deal, very powerful deal, great for both countries. And I think we'll have that done very, very quickly. We have all of our trade people. We have Wilbur Ross with us. We have all of the trade people. Rex and I had a tremendous meeting yesterday with President Putin. And we've had really great meetings with a lot of people. We're having a lot today, but Prime Minister May and I have developed a very special relationship. And I think trade will be a very big factor between our two countries. So I want to thank you very much. Thank
you. Trump and May at the G20 summit in Hamburg, which is over now. Yes, totally great, totally awesome, great deal. Had these great people, Wilbur Ross, great people, great guy. I'm great. We're all great. Now, Trump met Putin too. Before we hear how that went, this is interesting. It's very interesting how Trump's meeting with Vladimir Putin is being reported, because depending on where you get your news, it's being reported in different ways. Before we get to that, though, going to take a very quick break. This is Sunday View live on davidicke.com, richieallen.co.uk, TuneIn Radio and Fab Radio 2 in the great city of Manchester. I'll be back with you very soon.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
Sunday View. Welcome back to it. It's exactly half past the hour half 11, really, I should say. Again, if you're listening to this later on, it's recorded between 11 a.m. UK time, British summer time, and finishes around about midday or sometimes a little bit just before that. Thanks for your company. A lot of tweets on the European Union on our Twitter page. Go to twitter.com and to see what other people are tweeting, just put Richie Allen Show into Twitter, all one word. Dean Smith tweets, arguing with a pro-EU pal, him saying our economy will be ruined, ending up like Greece. I replied, says Dean, Greece are still in WTF. Well, the European Union has destroyed the Greek economy. It has destroyed the standard of living in Greece. It has plunged hundreds of thousands of Greeks, otherwise doing well, into a nightmare of never-ending poverty. It has driven young men and women with abilities, with talent, with business nous, with skill, out of that country. It has crippled it, is what the European Union has done to Greece. There's no doubt about that. Keep those tweets coming in. It's at Richie Allen Show. GP Brown tweets, America are desperate to get rid of their GMO food. Guess what will be on our menu? Tweets GP. That's a good point as well. These are the damned tweets, wasting time and money on a soft Brexit. Get out, and I'm sure the EU countries will still deal with us, or they will lose money. It's exactly right, and I made that point earlier on. Mark Morrison tweets, we can't allow this. If Brexit is reversed, serious steps have to be taken to save our semblance of freedom and democracy forever. Spirit tweets, the establishment are desperate to force another EU referendum, and if that happens, it will be rigged. Richie says Spirit there. Good morning, Karen. Not surprised, says Karen. We don't live in a democracy. Of course, we won't be allowed to leave the EU, says Karen there. Hi to Pele Jr. as well, to Paul Sweeney and to Kazi, who are tweeting the programme at 28 minutes to 12 on this wonderfully beautiful Sunday morning here in this marvellous city. Trump met Donald, did he? He met Vladimir Putin, the Russian president, and they shook hands. How lovely. They shook hands. Putin said it was a great meeting, and Trump accepted that Russia didn't meddle in the election last November. That's what Putin said. Here is Vladimir himself.
Did Trump agree with your position that Russia had not intervened in the US elections? Let me repeat, he answered all the questions, and I think that he noted it and he agreed with it. But I think it's better to ask him exactly what you have asked rather than me.
So this is Putin's version of events, that they denied any Russian interference in the election. And according to Putin, he thinks that Trump believed him, that Russia played no role in it. Now, that runs counter, of course, to the assessment we've seen from U.S. intelligence agencies. And while the American press would love an opportunity to ask President Trump what his version of events is, so far it's the Russians who have put two officials in front of the camera, Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, who is in that meeting, and Russian President Vladimir Putin, to answer questions about this. Americans have put no one in front of the camera to answer questions. President Trump is slated to leave the G20 soon. He is not expected to hold a press conference. You heard from Secretary of State Rex Tillerson yesterday, but that briefing was also off camera.
Now, Trump and his team haven't refuted the claims made by Putin, but they did put somebody forward for comment. It was the Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, and he was on Air Force One. And he faced the assembled media, who asked him, Mnuchin, if the version of the meeting put forward by Putin was accepted by Trump and his team. Listen to this.
Putin and Sergey Lavrov walked out of that bylaw yesterday and went out, and they told people that President Trump had accepted their denial of election interference. Is that true?
Let me just say, first of all, I think President Trump handled the meeting brilliantly. Okay? It was very clear what started as a 30-minute meeting, and President Trump made it very clear in addressing the issues around the election. After a very substantive discussion on this, they reached an agreement that they would start a cyber unit to make sure that there was absolutely no interference whatsoever, that they would work on cybersecurity together, and President Trump focused focus the conversation on Syria and the Ukraine and North Korea. And I think it's very important that President Trump had very substantive dialogue with his counterpart on this, and that it is very clear that there are many issues we need to open a dialogue on. And I think President Trump handled it brilliantly.
Yeah, a politician's answer. It must be pointed out again, as was revealed on this program last week. The Russians have been pushing for a, what would you call it? A treaty on cybersecurity for decades. Well, for two decades anyway. For two decades, the Russians have been pushing and pushing for there to be an agreement about things that countries won't do to their neighbours and to other countries in terms of hacking and all of that. Isn't that incredible when you think about it? And again, in these reports, they should put a caveat on all of these reports by saying the Russians have always wanted to get a treaty going, discussions going, and eventually one signed, but they don't do that. It's utter bollocks. The Russians didn't hack, interfere with, or affect the outcome of the US election last year. It is nonsense. There is no evidence of it. There's been a few other comments on the minutes of, I don't think there were any minutes, maybe there were minutes. There have been a few comments on the nature of the discussion between Putin and Trump. Rex Tillerson, the lunatic warmongering US Secretary of State, he gave a different account of the conversation. He said it was robust, and it was lengthy on the subject of Russia's alleged meddling. That's what Tillerson said. He said the two leaders had agreed the issue was a substantial hindrance in the ability of us to move the Russian-US relationship forward. And that while Trump had raised serious questions about Russia's actions, he was rightly focused on how do we move forward from what might be an intractable disagreement. That's from Rex Tillerson there. And in a statement released after the meeting, Chuck Schumer, the top Democrat in the Senate, he said, for Tillerson to say that Russia's interference will remain unresolved is disgraceful. To give equal credence to the findings of the American intelligence community and the assertion by Mr. Putin is a grave dereliction of duty and will only encourage Russia to further interfere in our elections in the future, said Chuck Schumer. Chuck Schumer basically saying, how dare you say that Putin's word is as good as the word of the FBI? How dare you? I mean, Jesus Christ, Schumer has got one hell of a sense of humour, doesn't he? I was watching Sky News earlier today just to see how the meeting between Putin and Trump was covered. Typically, it's dreadful. It's dreadful, right? It's really dreadful. Sky invited Wall Street Journal writer Sohrab Ahmari on their breakfast programme. Holy Jesus. Listen to what Sohrab Ahmari says about Trump and how he categorises Putin, and then listen to the behaviour of Sky News presenter Stephen Dixon. Listen to this.
Well, Trump is a man of contradictions. On the one hand, his speech in Warsaw was very good. It was seen as a defence of Western values, and he mentioned Mr. Putin as an aggressive power that seeks to destabilise its neighbours, destabilise the Middle East. And then, there was concern about over-cordiality at this meeting where he said, it's an honor to meet you. Well, Putin is a dictator, a thug. So
Putin is a dictator and a thug, right? So surely the Sky News presenter is going to challenge that. It's an outrageous categorization of the president of Russia. Right, so he's going to jump in there and say, you can't say that, right?
You never know with Mr. Trump which Mr. Trump will be on that day. The one who can say the right things about defense of Western values or the one who is too cozy with Vladimir Putin.
Well, it keeps us all guessing, keeps us all talking, which is...
Keeps us all employed.
Keeps us in a job.
Yeah, and thanks for coming in, by the way, and have a good Sunday. I'm not going to challenge you calling the leader of Russia a thug and a dictator. I'm not going to say anything.
Again, this, Putin is a dictator, a thug. So you never know with Mr. Trump which Mr. Trump will be on that day. The one who can say the right things about defense of Western values, or the one who is too cozy.
Who are you to call the leader of Russia a thug?
And keeps all talking, which is
all employed.
No, but the ever useless Stephen Dixon just laughs it off. This is the standard. You see that we have to endure. In 2017, this is the standard. It's not news, it's just never-ending propaganda. Dictator and a thug. It keeps us all guessing, doesn't it? Yes, and it keeps us all in a job. Wonderful. Going to move on. I'm not going to swear, we're going to move on. That was Sohrab Ahmari, a elite establishment propagandist who writes for the Wall Street Journal. And the other idiot was Stephen Dixon, utterly failing to execute his job, to do his job, and to challenge what Ahmari said. Back to the Sunday papers. We did the Observer, didn't we? We did the Times. Where are we now? The Sunday Telegraph, are we? Yes, the Sunday Telegraph. Front page, Brexit may place Trump card. Brexit may place Trump card. So in the headline, it's the same story as the Sunday Times. Basically, the Telegraph saying that May seized on the optimism of Donald Trump and of world leaders over Brexit to face down growing rebellion from her own colleagues. In a pointed rebuke of critics, says the Telegraph, May played up the prospects of increasing trade with old friends and new partners after leaving the EU. So the Sunday Telegraph, basically the same story as the Sunday Times. However, the Mail on Sunday leads with, May must quit now, says Chief Davis ally. The Mail on Sunday reveals that pressure is growing on Theresa May to quit as Prime Minister after reports that Tory ex-chief whip Andrew Mitchell said she had lost all authority and should go. Mitchell, the Mail goes on to say, is a key ally of Brexit Secretary David Davis, who, with some bookmakers, is favoured to succeed Mrs. May. I think that's pretty much nonsense myself. The Sunday Express front page, May is dealt Trump card on Brexit. Again, May did well out of her meeting with Trump and the trade deal that they have agreed. What time is it? It's 18 minutes to 12 to midday. That is the papers. That is the papers. I want to focus now, just for a few minutes, on David Lidington. Now, David Lidington is the new Justice Secretary. He took over as the new Justice Secretary from Liz Truss. Now, intriguingly, he is a big supporter of the European Union. So you might ask, dear listener, why was he appointed by Theresa May? You might also say, well, Richie, if he had the minerals, if he had the moxie and the resume to be Justice Secretary, it shouldn't matter whether or not he is the new Justice Secretary. But of course, none of these people, whether they are appointed to the key financial positions, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, or whether they are appointed to the environment job, or in this case, the Justice Secretary, none of them have any grounding or any experience in that field. None of them. None of them. Ever. Right? So why appoint a guy to a very senior position in the party who doesn't want to leave the European Union? We'll come back to his thoughts on the European Union shortly. Anyway, he was on the Andrew Marr show, and importantly, he was first of all asked about Grenfell Tower, which is kind of going off at the front pages. People are forgetting about Grenfell Tower. This is the exchange.
Can I start with the Grenfell Tower inquiry? Do you have absolute confidence in Sir David Moore-Bick as the chairman of that inquiry?
Yes. I mean, the way this worked is when the Prime Minister wanted a full-scale public inquiry, I called the Lord Chief Justice, so the head of the judiciary, and said, please, can you find us a judge with the right background seniority to take this on and get to the truth? He came up with Sir Martin Moore-Bick, who is somebody held in huge respect by his fellow judges. He's somebody who's got no interest in this other than to get to the truth and see justice done.
What the residents and other people living in the area seem to fear is that the remit will be too narrow. Who actually sets the remit for the inquiry?
Well, the remit, under the law, the 2005 Act, the law, the terms of reference are ultimately set by the chair of the inquiry, the judge, in conjunction with the department that is commissioning the inquiry.
So you are involved in the remit?
Well, no, I am, but the department commissioning this will be the Cabinet Office and Number 10. I play the role of just asking the judiciary to the Chief Justice to find the judge to do the job there. And what Sir Martin is doing, as was promised, is to consult the residents, try to make sure that their expectations are taken into account.
Yes, but they're not listening to the residents, and we saw the exchange between Martin Moore Bick and the residents the other day. I played some of the audio on Friday's programme. He's a ringer, they believe. And he told them, well, he told Sky News that he can't satisfy the demands, he can't satisfy the desire of the residents to get the answers they want. Right? So Liddington, David Liddington, the new Justice Secretary, he acknowledges to Marr in the next exchange that an inquiry is effectively a toothless thing.
So the government could say to Sir Martin, can we have a slightly broader remit than you've suggested?
We've got to be careful about one thing, because this has come up in the debate about the scope of the inquiry. The inquiry doesn't look into criminal guilt or innocence. There's a separate police inquiry going on into that matter already.
What a lot of the residents seem to be worried about is that part of the story of the terrible thing that happened there was about years and years and years of underfunding in local government. It's essentially a political story which might put Conservatives in the dock, and that therefore the inquiry is being narrowed to avoid that.
I think when we've looked at what's come out in the last few weeks since the Grenfell tragedy, with tower blocks in authorities of all political colours failing the combustibility test, fire regulations, if we want to start pointing fingers, brought in under the Blair government. I mean, look, all political parties, I think, need to do some soul-searching about this. I'm very confident we'll get some terms of reference that will get to the truth about what happened, not just in terms of what happened on that particular day in Grenfell,
but
what the regulatory decisions and the responsibilities that led up to that.
If regulatory failures and, frankly, spending cuts were partly to blame for the story, that will come out from the inquiry.
It's up to Sir Martin to determine exactly how the inquiry goes. Of course, he can compel any witness to attend under pain of a criminal offence, and he can compel witnesses to give evidence under oath as well, and evidence in his inquiry can, if the Police and Crown Prosecution Service think it justifies it, later be used for a criminal investigation prosecution as well.
Possibly hundreds of people died. An inquest should have been called immediately. This will be a whitewash. And in my opinion, Martin Moore Bick is a ringer. He was slipped in to cover it all up by a government and a Prime Minister who has previous in slipping people into inquiries. Because what we saw at Grenfell was manslaughter. Manslaughter. The agenda was to socially cleanse the area. Buildings were run down. Risks were taken with fire safety. Combustible cladding was erected onto buildings so there would be a fire, so they could say the buildings are not fit for purpose and they need to be demolished. I'm not saying, and I don't believe, that anybody was meant to die. I don't believe that. But a lot of people did die, so in my opinion it's manslaughter. And it has been committed. Will anybody be held to account for it? Will we be thrown a patsy? I think it's probably likely we'll be thrown a patsy. And the people responsible for social cleansing and gentrification, the string masters, as David calls them, those people will not be held accountable for it, and the agenda will carry on. It's exactly 11 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. Back to the European Union. And Andrew Marr, again speaking with David Liddington, David Liddington, the new Justice Secretary, in this wide-ranging interview from this morning's programme. Marr asks him this about the European Union. Listen to this.
Is it possible for British business to have as good access to the single market as it does now once we've left the EU?
That will depend not just on us, but on the EU27.
Surely the answer is no.
Look at what the repeal bill is doing. That is going to repeal the European Communities Act in the jurisdiction of the EU in this country, but at the same time put all current EU legal obligations and regulatory obligations and standards onto a British legal basis. Now, if the EU decides to introduce some more restrictive or protectionist measures in the future, clearly we would not be in compliance with those. But it seems to me it is in the mutual interests of everybody, us and our 27 neighbours and friends, to try to make sure that our businesses all prosper from having access to each other's markets.
You thought during the referendum campaign that leaving the EU would be a catastrophe for British business and British prosperity. Looking now from where you are and looking at what Donald Trump and Mr. Modi and Xi have said at the G20, do you now regret what you said then?
No, I don't. I took very firm view in that campaign and before that I thought British interests were best served, both strategic and economic, by staying within the EU. But the people took a different decision as they were democratically entitled to do. And I don't think if you call yourself a Democrat, you can somehow say we should just set that aside and ignore it. That would do immense harm to public confidence in democracy.
And again, Marr didn't push this guy enough. The entire interview will be on the BBC YouTube channel today, so you will see what I mean. Marr knows that this guy is a Remainer and that this guy is in favour of this bullshit term soft Brexit, but he doesn't tease him out on it. Why May appointed this guy to the cabinet and to such a position is beyond me. Going to take a really, really quick break. This is Sunday View on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 and TuneIn Radio back in a second.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Welcome back. 8 minutes to midday. This is Sunday View live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2. Just before we go, the BBC are reporting that a ceasefire brokered by the US and Russia has come into force in southwestern Syria. That's being reported by the BBC. It was announced after Presidents Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin met at the G20 talks over the weekend. It's backed by Jordan, is this truce even. Now, the ceasefire, which Russia has said covers the regions of Deraa, Quneitra and Sweida, was reported to result from months of undisclosed talks between officials from Russia and the United States. Speaking after the meeting between Trump and Putin, US Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said this is our first indication of the US and Russia being able to work together in Syria. What do you make of that? Southwestern Syria, a ceasefire in effect brokered by the US, Russia with the backing of Jordan. All very interesting indeed. Not much else that I've missed really this morning. I think we've given it to you. Straight lot of entertainment nonsense in the newspapers today, as you would expect. But I think that's about it for Sunday View today. Thank you so much for tuning into it and for listening to it. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate your company. I really do. We'll be back, of course, live with the weekly radio show tomorrow. The weekday radio show tomorrow at 7 p.m. UK time. That's 7 p.m. British summer time tomorrow. where I'll have plenty of comment, plenty of stories and guests, of course. Remember our YouTube channel at youtube.com. If you look for The Richie Allen Show, it's got all of our interviews. Pretty much everything we've done since the programme began. So do subscribe to the YouTube channel. It's good, the YouTube channel there. What else is there for me to tell you? Yes, this programme, if you've come in on the end of it, will be on podcast real soon. In about 15 minutes or thereabouts, it'll be on podcast. And of course, I will get it on YouTube within about 90 minutes from now. Hopefully, when you see it, do share it with others. Let them know. Going to make a funding appeal. Our funding has never been as low as it is now. Again, if you're not in a position to make a contribution to any such programme, don't worry about it. Don't listen to what I'm about to say. But if you do listen to programmes like this and you are in a position to make a small or any sized contribution to the maintenance of it and to us paying our bills, do go to paypal.me/Richie Allen. That's paypal.me/Richie Allen. But if you go to richieallen.co.uk, you will see there are bank account details there as well. Please do support this programme only if you listen to it all the time and if you think it's worth supporting. If you don't, don't. It's as simple as that. Going to leave you and love you with some Bob Dylan to close out the programme. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. It's quite glorious out there. At least it is in the northwest anyway. And you and I will talk again tomorrow at 7 p.m. BST. In the meantime, do look after yourselves and one another. Bye for now.